Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Hello, welcome to the What's Sold podcast. My name is Brandon. I'm here with my good friend Matt, also known as Rusty the Reseller. I was just watching one of your Rusty videos today, and I thought it was actually just auto-played because I was moving some playlists around, and I love that little part that you do at the very beginning. It's so funny. I was audibly laughing. Yes, it's pure genius.
Oh, that is Nate. That is Peaches did that.
We need to have an intro like that on this show.
Yeah, it was
so good. I started laughing when I heard it. But anyway, you know what many of you may not know. Maybe I don't know how you found the podcast or how you keep finding it. And we really appreciate it. We love the show's growing. So wherever you're listening, we're thankful for that. Remember to write a review if you get a chance. But one of the interesting things about this is that this sort of was born out of the fact that Matt and Nate, Peaches and Rusty, started these YouTube channels of finding, sourcing stuff. And Matt does a caricature, but a sweet caricature of a guy named Rusty. And I love it. I think I'm saying that unabashedly. I know that that we're friends and I like it, but I'm like, man, that's what's great about the world today is that somebody can create something. And as long as it's good, people are going to watch it. So hopefully that's what we're doing here as well.
Well, and I guess it's convincing enough because people have emailed since we started this podcast and said, I had no idea that it was a character.
Yeah.
So, I think people who follow it enough, I would suspect most people are like, this dude can't be this way.
Hello there, cousin.
But
so good. So absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's what also is so cool about it is that we get engagement. You know, that's what's really fun about it. People ask questions and they engage, but they buy into it because it's like I have this intro. I say how you do, cousins. It's you're my cousin, I'm yours, and we're just, you know, we're just trying to make a book, right? I mean, this is what it's about.
So good.
And people get on and they're like, hey, it's cousin from England over here, or here. I'm your cousin over here in Australia. I'm doing the same thing. And like they buy into it. They're like, we are all just sort of kind of connected in this distant but not true familial way, but in an endearing, like we share common interests and we're interested in learning and maybe doing this thing.
And what's interesting is that this is, I could very much see this being a very cutthroat industry trade. And the great part about you and Rusty in general is you're not cutthroat. Anybody that knows you, Matt's not going to cheat you. It's just not your style. It's not who you are. It's not what you want to be.
Yeah.
And you could see running into a Rusty and going, hey, Rusty's okay. Hey, good for you, Rusty, that you found that.
Yeah.
Good on you that you're doing this and whatever. So I just love it.
Well, I think you need to check yourself because, I mean, it would be easy. I've had circumstances, certainly, where it would have been very easy to take advantage of someone. I mean, I've been out at thrift stores looking at things and I end up having a conversation with other customers. And here's this like 75-year-old woman. And she's like, I've got a bunch of when my husband died, he's got all this stuff in the safe. You should come look at it. And they give me their phone number. They're like, come on over. And I'm like, you don't know me. You're inviting me into your home. You're an aging person. And you know what I mean? It's like, I think that there's some dangers. I mean, people be careful out there. Not everyone is going to be honest.
Right.
And I think that some of the people who are dishonest is what maybe makes the industry of people doing what I do a little bit. People are hesitant about it. And you have every, you know, reason to be and right to be. I think that if you're going to develop relationships, you need to spend some time building rapport. I usually give people multiple options and I'll say, the options I'm offering you, I'm willing to do any of these, but you choose. And then when you feel, if you get to a level of comfort and you want to give me a little bit more leeway, like once I can come to your space, I'll photograph something at a location of your choose, but you hold on to the items. When they sell, I'll come back and retrieve them and fulfill them. After I've done that a few times, then they're like, well, maybe you can just hold on to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You go in phases and I'm totally fine with that. But I would imagine that there's some really bad circumstances out there with people who, don't know. It's, it has all to do with your character and your integrity. Like, you're going to, it could be, I could work in any job and try to take advantage of people and,
absolutely.
And get a step ahead. With this, where it's really based on just moving around and relationships and individual interactions where it's just you and this other person and no one else is around, it's their word against yours. You have to be careful. I know that from my background in being a therapist, if ever there was an issue with a patient or something that needed to be addressed, like I had another counselor come in and we sat there together. Like if there was going to be a tough situation or a family member, I don't want there to ever be someone accusing me of something. Like you have to be careful in today's day and age, or maybe always, you have to be very careful. You have to be thoughtful. You have to think ahead, but it's still really cool. I don't want that to sound scary to people, but it is a reality. You know, you have to watch what you're doing. You have to check yourself. If you overstep, even unintentionally, you need to own up to that and apologize and see how you can rebuild the trust and that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's funny because my wife and I use Facebook Marketplace only because it's easy and it's basically local. But I was thinking about what we'd said about eBay. And it's part of the problem with eBay is like, it really is in the hands of the buyer, not the seller. So the people that are ostensibly listening to this show are mostly sellers. But I was thinking about the fact that we probably need to do a show on, as a buyer, what to be aware of. And we bought this electric scooter. We went out and met this guy. It was $60, whatever it was. No big deal. We were buying a second electric scooter. My daughter already had one. We wanted one for her friend when she came over. Anywho, we get there. It was at night. We meet this guy. He seemed decent enough fella. And I said, hey, does this work? He said, yeah, the cord was a little bit off, but it works. Just charge it up when you get home. So we got home, we charged it. It didn't work. So I'm like, okay, maybe the battery's bad. So I replaced it. I did all this stuff. It never worked. My wife emailed him, said, hey, he's like, well, it worked when I sent it to you. I'm like, well, okay, it doesn't work. So she finally emailed him, said, hey, listen, we've tried everything. It doesn't work. Can you just give us our money back? And the guy he blocked her on Facebook. So the point being is like, okay, that guy's a dirtbag. For $60, you do what you need to do. You obviously need that money more than we did. I'm totally fine. But I guess it's that whole point of the psychology behind, if you're going to be the kind of person that's going to sell your junk to somebody and rip them off, that's the I guess the point I'm trying to make is that eBay at least gives the purchaser a chance. Like if you did that to me, I would write a thing on there and say, and by the way, eBay would make you give it back, the money back. But I would write a thing on there saying, hey, this guy is a scam artist. You can't really do that on Facebook Marketplace. There's really no place for that. So just, I don't know. At some point, maybe we'll do a what to be aware of as a seller as well as to be a buyer.
Yeah, or some rules that you should sort of have in your head that you're gonna follow a certain protocol to protect yourself.
Like don't go to a dark parking lot in the middle of the night and buy something without testing it. Maybe that would be one of the rules we do, Matt.
Sure. I mean, that's a good one to start
with. Seems fairly bad.
Did you buy it in a dark alley?
No, it was in an Ingles parking lot. But the point being is that I am my father's son and I don't trust people innately. And I was just in a hurry. Anyway, we'll talk about it. I think this is fodder for a great show, but we have been running a little bit long on our shows because you and I banter too much, which is great.
Yeah, but in the beginning.
But let's dive into it. What sold this week, Matt, and what are we going to be talking about today?
So I'm going to show you a couple of items that sold, and these are of the photographic nature.
Oh.
And then ephemera? Today, and this is sort of paper ephemera, my friend. Oh, nice. I suppose it would fit into that category. Nice, yeah. Nice. And then we will go into talking about tax, like basically costs. This is a little bit of a back-end conversation today about what costs are involved in selling like this online, like I do. So if you mentioned this in a previous episode, like it's not as simple as you buy something for $5 and then you sell it for $20 and hey, I made $15. Well, no, there are some costs that are coming out of that.
Sure.
And if you're just getting started, you may not necessarily know all of those or what to look at. And I may not cover every single little thing today, but I will cover several of them. And the disclaimer is I'm only going to be talking about myself and my situation because there are a few of these things that are variable. So the actual numbers are not what's important. It's the categories of these costs that will be the takeaway for you who's listening today. So this first item is a photo booth strip.
Oh.
Have you ever taken a picture in a photo booth?
Yeah, I try to avoid it, but I believe I had a high school girlfriend or two that wanted to kiss in a photo booth. It seems like that's sort of the appropriate thing to do in the photo booth. But yes, I'm sure I have. It's at many points in my life.
If I had thought ahead, I would have pulled out another one to show you. But let me tell you about this one. This is a 4 photo frame, photo strip. Mm-hmm. It's about, let's call it 6 inches tall and about 1 3/4 inches wide. And this was taken actually in my photo booth by a guy I know. He's dressed up here. He's dressed up from a costume party. He's trying to look like Little Richard here.
Oh.
And that's why he's in this costume. But anyhow, so this sold for $16 on eBay.
The picture did?
This photograph.
Oh my gosh.
So let me tell you what's brilliant about photo booth pictures. First of all, it's difficult to find them. Photo booth was commercially available, I think maybe 1928, 1929, something like that. Early in the 30s is when they really sort of became available to the mass audiences. And it was the first selfie you could take. You sat down, you put in a coin or something, you pushed a button, and a camera that no one was holding, no one was operating, took a photo of you, and this machine apparatus on the inside had these little arms that would take this piece of paper that the photo was developed on. It would drop it in this rotating circular vat that had multiple containers, all the different chemicals used for a photo darkroom. And it would drop it in one. It was set to be the timing of it to be in there for whatever, 20 seconds. It raises it. The vat rotates around. It drops it straight down again into the new container. And it goes through that whole process, developer and everything. And then after 3 or 4 minutes, it would drop down and you would have this photo. It's a moment in time. There's no editing. This is just what you did is what you got. I absolutely love it. That's why I like photography. I like still images of things. I ran a photo booth rental company. This is one of these other previous jobs of mine. In between, this is sort of early side hustle work. And I live in the Western North Carolina area. Asheville has a lot of premier wedding venues, so it's a great place for people to travel to get married. And in the last few years, one of the popular things that has been available are people will rent photo booths. So they'll bring a photo booth to your wedding event, and you get to have all of your guests and the bride and groom, or the bride and bride, groom and groom, take photos in this photo booth, and then you take them out. My booth would create two strips. Mm-hmm. So one the guest would take, the other one they would put in a cumulative scrapbook. And that was a gift for the bride and groom at the end of the event. They got to see all these pictures that their friends and family took. Cool thing. I have a photo booth. When I have friends over and things, sometimes I'll have friends come in and take, instead of having like a little book on your coffee table where people can sign in when they come and visit you, they come and take a photo booth picture. And it's cool to see that over time. It's just a fun hobby of mine.
Does the technology, obviously, it's not dropping into vats now.
Correct. So now it's a digital booth. You have this little dye sublimation printer. It doesn't use ink. It does use ink, but it's a ribbon on plastic. It sublimates. It heats it up and sublimates the ink into the paper. But the genius thing about this technology is that I can take as many photos as I want. I can set up my printer to not even print it if I want. I can just create the digital images, or I can print them. But what's great about the idea of selling photo booth images with a digital photo booth is that you can take as many photos as you want, you can list them for sale, but you can continue to print an unlimited amount of that same photo.
Right.
So this photo, it is its own thing. I sold it, but in a month, I can relist it. I can reprint it again.
Why would somebody buy that then?
Because people collect photo booth images. Oh. They think they're interesting. I try to make ones that are as interesting as possible with odd things like, I've got this little model that's for sketching, like a little person. You can move their limbs and stuff. You put that in the photo booth, take pictures of it. How many photo booth pictures do you see of like a little wooden man? And they're like, you don't see that hardly. And so when people see unique, odd, bizarre, sometimes stuff that's really sexual on eBay sells. And so anyways, the point is I sold this and I'm making photos all the time. If I really wanted to focus on it, I could have thousands and thousands of images out there and it never costs me anything. There's no cost there. I take the photo. I only print it when it sells.
Right.
So I'm not out any money. Once it sells, I print it nice and so that's just kind of a fun thing I do on the side. That's one thing that sold. Another thing is in a lot of a variety of paper ephemera, as you mentioned before, I came into position of maybe 75 different photographs of famous musicians, singers, actors, actresses, and things. Some of them are signed. So hand signed. So it was held by that actual person and they signed it at some point. And so their original authentic, I don't know who, probably different manufacturers made them. But this one's of Mariah Carey. And she's just standing there in a white dress, singing her heart out.
And she signed it?
This one is not signed, but it's still sold for $20.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Because there's like, I'm a big fan of a couple of bands that I would, if I saw like authentic photos that were done at a live concert, say in like 1977, that I could frame, I would buy that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them are set up kind of like mimicking the old pinup style artistry of the 1930s and 40s. And others are just action scenes from a movie and they've signed it or whatever. Very cool stuff. That stuff's easy because it costs like $2 or $3 to ship. It's a media mail, so you can ship it at a really cheap price. That's some stuff that sold. I brought that up just because I haven't shown stuff like that recently. And those things are, they're not, again, you're not retiring on that stuff, but it's about volume. If I have thousands of things like that.
Do you put that into a separate store? I mean, how does that work for you when you're like, because you talk about so many different things that you sell. How do you list them within your store itself? And if this is a bigger topic, we can save that for another show, but I'm curious about how you put it together.
I can take a deep dive on it in a future episode, but just to simply answer your question, you can list most things. There are a few things on eBay, for example, that are restricted because they're either illegal or they have their own policies against it for their own reasons. But within a listing, you can assign that listing or that item into a particular category. Mm. So when a person is searching, they're searching with, just like you would search in Google with words or a phrase, and you would set up a title that way, but it is going to fit into whatever category, and they have categories for everything. So in this case, there's categories and subcategories. I would come up with paper ephemera, and the secondary thing would be photographic images. The next thing would say photographic images of celebrities. Mm-hmm. I don't actually know what the sub one, but you can get very specific with it. And then a person can either search just with a query, or they can search specifically within a particular category that they're interested in to narrow their scope.
Okay, I have like 9 million questions for you, but I'm going to save those because I'm like, I'm literally jotting down this.
That's a whole episode.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that is totally a whole episode. But anyway, that's super cool. All right, so what are we going to be talking about in MASH today?
So I want to, for the sake of brevity here, because we've already covered some cool stuff, I wanted to, and this is a response to emails we've received recently about, hey, Matt or Rusty, can you talk about costs of selling? I don't hear people talk a whole lot about the back end of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a cool thing you found. This is where you found it. This is what you paid for it, what you sold it for. But when I'm going out, especially for those who are starting out, what costs do you need to have in the back of your head to consider when you sell an item? So very simple. I bought something for $1 and I sold it for $10. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you're taking home $9 in net profit? Are you 90% profitable from that transaction? The answer is no. So let me tell you some of the categories and things that you need to, before you ever start selling, I recommend that you go into these. Pause for a moment. Disclaimer, I am not an accountant. I don't even pretend to be one. I am not an attorney.
You did my
maybe
taxes this
is a future
this year,
career.
Matt. I thought
this maybe,
well, you told me you were
I mean, just helping out a friend.
You were a certified public accountant. Anyway.
Listen, I needed the money. So the point of this is, I think that if you should seek a tax consultant, you should seek an accountant or someone to help you refine this stuff. This is really just food for thought. Investigate this stuff on your own or seek professional help if you think it's necessary. The basic things are, you need to know what your tax bracket is. There's different tax rates depending on how much you earn in annually. You are going to have to pay taxes on the stuff that you sell. On eBay, one advantage of eBay is that they actually withhold the state taxes on your behalf. So as I'm setting up my store, I say, I'm in North Carolina. eBay checks to see what that year's state tax, income tax is, or state tax, for your state and your county, and they withhold that. So I never actually have to mess with state taxes with those things that I sell on eBay.
Do you know why that's genius on the part of eBay? Because they're holding on to all that money for the whole
year. They're making money.
They're making
money on that
money.
It's like banks.
Yeah, I would bet you if you looked at their total profit sheet or whatever, there's a term for it, P&L or whatever, that mm-hmm. that would probably be one of their biggest moneymakers, because it's the same yeah. thing that a lot of HR companies do, where even if they float those millions of dollars for just one day, they make so much money in the interest on it. So eBay's investing that money.
Oh, not only that, and this is an aside, but when you're a new eBay store, they restrict your payouts on your funds for at least 3 months, sometimes more. So if I'm at the level I am today, when something sells and it say it's paid for on the same day, I'm not getting that money for 3 or 4 days, but that's the soonest I will get it. If you're a new store, they'll hold it up to 30 days. What are they doing with your money for 30 days? It's not just sitting there.
Right.
They're making money on that stuff.
Wow, that's
for sure.
That is genius.
And then the reason for that is they say, whoa, we don't know you. We gotta make sure that all your transactions are without problem and that you're running your store correctly. And it's sort of, you've got a 90-day temporary period where they're sort of watching to make sure. But all the while, they're making money.
Right.
So the thing is tax. So for me, I'm not just thinking about my own taxes, right? I'm thinking about my household taxes because I'm married. My spouse works as well.
Wait, can I pause you for 1 second? Sorry. As you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, and people could look at that and say, eBay, I can't believe you're doing this, whatever. But that's the cost. That's part of that cost of selling, or the cost of the services that you have to know going in. There's nobody doing this for free. They're not just good. Hey, we really love you, Matt. Mm-hmm. You're a good dude. No, there's a cost. Yeah. So being aware of that going in is also part of the calculation that needs to take place when you start doing this. Don't get mad at them. That's just the nature of the mm-hmm. beast. So anyway.
Yeah.
But I thought that I think that's an important point to think about when you're starting a business, that's just part of cost of doing business.
Of course. And I've kind of blown past the whole formation of a business, like getting what entity are you going to create? Is this going to be a limited liability company? Are you going to, do you have an S corp? What do you have? I started out, I still have a limited liability company, an LLC, and money that comes from earnings from an LLC is just considered pass-through income. So it's no different than my own personal money I make from a W-2. It would be the same thing. I'm taxed on it. So for me, my tax bracket is 24% is what I'm going to owe in federal taxes on my income. So right off the bat, I have to know that when I sell something, I have to hold 24% back of that money that came in, because I may owe that later at the mm-hmm. end of the year when I do taxes. The next thing is, I use eBay primarily. You may use Etsy. You may do other things. But whatever avenue you use to sell through, what are the fees that you're going to incur by utilizing that platform? And for me, with eBay, it's 13.5%. If I'm not being restricted for some reason, or I don't have too many dings on my account where they're going to start charging me more, because that can happen if you have too many bad reviews or things like that. So 13.5%. So already we're at 24% and 13.5%. Now I don't have to withhold 13.5%. That money is held out by eBay before they ever issue me my payment. Mm-hmm. But I just need to know that when I'm considering purchasing something, I'm going to lose 13.5% of the money comes in here to eBay. And I'm got to hold back 24%. So what is that?
37.5%.
We're already at 37.5%. So the next thing is, when you buy this item, you're going to hold on to it until it sells. How big is that item? How small? How much space does it take up? Do you need to pay to have this item stored? Or can you store it at your own home? If you're going to incur fees or costs, like let's say you buy out an entire estate and all of a sudden you need to have 4 or 5 storage units. How much are those storage units going to cost you? You need to factor in that you're going to have these other costs. I don't know what that would look like. I am down to very, very little cost on that. I have bought multiple large items, estates, antique stores, buyouts, things like that. So I've had as many as 7 or 8 storage units at one time. I'm down to 1 right now. I feel great about that. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get down to 0. The rest I store at my home. So you can factor some of that in taxes at the end of the year as a tax deduction, but that's another conversation. So do you have storage costs? You need to factor that in. The other two things that you need to consider are shipping costs, mm-hmm. which is kind of a wash for me because I always build that into my sale price. Whether I'm doing this is the cost and it's free shipping, or this is the cost and then you have shipping there. If I know that I'm going to sell a piece of jewelry and I'm going to be shipping it in a bubble mailer, and I know that the shipping is going to cost about $4.50, and that bubble mailer is costing me about 60 cents, then I'm building in $5 into the sale cost. So the buyer's paying that on my behalf. I don't have to account for that necessarily. Like I spent the money, but I'm getting it back.
But you're assuming that that price is going to be acceptable, i.e. when you're selling an item, yes, you're going to build in the thing, but it's also going to affect the total cost. So it's going to affect the amount of people that might buy it. That's something to be aware
of. And you need to know that when you're researching it before you buy it. You need to look at what the comps are and say, okay, I'm pretty sure I can sell this. And after I buy the box that I'm going to need to ship this in, and after they've paid me for the shipping, and after I've taken out eBay fees, and after I've taken out my taxes, and what other costs that you may incur, is the net income coming in still worth my time?
Oh, man.
And that's what you have to decide. So it is a somewhat of a complicated calculation. But once you do it a few times, you get used to kind of determining that for yourself. The only other big one is the cost of the good. How much is your cost of goods going to be? If you're just starting out, you're only buying a handful of things a month, it's really easy to figure that out. You can make a basic spreadsheet. You can just write it out and calculate it. But I buy thousands of items a year and I sell thousands of items a year. It's very difficult for me to keep up with that. And frankly, it doesn't even make sense for me to spend a ton of time on that because I lose money by spending time on that and not just doing my business. But from what I can gather, I try to keep at the highest end, and this is across everything. This is from a dollar item I bought, and this is from up to a $5,000 instrument that I bought, because I'm buying and selling things in that range. It's a very large range. So my cost of goods on a $5,000 instrument might be 80%. But if I can sell that and make $2,000, I'm okay paying 80% of the cost. But on an item that's smaller, like I want it to be, after I buy a lot of 100 things and I sell some stuff, I want the remainder of those things to only have cost me 10 cents or nothing. And in that case, if I buy 100 items and sell 10 to make my money back, then 90 of those 100 things cost me, I have zero cost of goods in those. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want to be at 20% at the most, but I'm really trying to stay at about 12.5%. And I'll explain why right now. So if you go back to what we said before, taxes for me are 24%, eBay fees are 13.5%. And let's say that a combination for me of the shipping costs and my cost of goods is not going to exceed 20%. 20% is what I'm looking at there. If you add those up, that is 57.5%. Mm-hmm. So if I am actually spending 20%, like 20% of my cost is cost of goods and shipping, then my profitability is going to be 42.5%. But if I can get it down to the 12.5% I mentioned, then I'm at 50% profitability. I just like that number. Mm-hmm. It's half. So if I sell something for $10, I'm going to end up with $5 net profit. Is that worth it to me?
Mm-hmm.
And so then when I'm looking, I know how to do all those calculations in my head. It always comes down to around 50% for me. So if I pay for $20 for something and I sell it for $100, am I okay paying $20 to make $50?
Mm-hmm.
That's just the monetary calculation. There's a whole other calculation about time.
Yeah, I was going
to say. How long am I willing to let this sit and sell and make $50? I'm willing to do this if I can make $50 in the first auction cycle. I'm not willing to do this if it takes me 6 months to sell it. I can't tell you what's right for you out there, listener, how much money you have available to spend, how long you can reasonably float money and not need it back. These are some of the complicated things. So the main things are your cost of your good, your tax liability, and whatever fees are coming from the platform you're selling on. Those are the three big ones. Shipping is in there as something you need to pay attention to. Storage costs. Those are the primary ones that I'm dealing with when I'm doing that. For those who, I would say, put these categories down, do some research, find some other things. Postage, I buy my shipping labels through eBay because you can do that. And by doing that, I get a discount because USPS and eBay have a relationship where if you purchase it through eBay, and it tells you every time what percentage you saved. Oh, every time I sell a piece or buy my label through eBay, I saved 8% of shipping costs. Meaning if I drove the mile down the road to the postal service and I walked in and did it, I'm going to pay 8% more. So I try to cut costs by doing it through eBay.
Well, the metric that's, that you've not touched on, and we're going to have to touch on it, I just wrote it down again, is yes, those items you talked about are kind of the concrete items, but that the ethereal one, that sort of the one that's a little bit harder to grasp, is time. So you mentioned on another show recently, you said, I'll walk in and I'll look in 5 minutes, I'm decide how long I'm going to stay there. And it's not to say that you couldn't walk into a place and see an item that might, it, that might be the strike it rich item, but you still have to calculate in there, is it worth the time to take the chance? There's the risk part too, which is fascinating.
And only you can really decide that for yourself. Nobody can really tell you what that is. But if you go, you talk to anybody who runs their own business and you ask them if they would be willing to say, what is your profitability? What's your net profit? What percentage? I was working in the food and beverage industry before this. And if you have a restaurant that's at 8% profitability, that's good. At 8%, 10%, oh, you're crushing it. So if you're like, I do 50%. Now, if I were to say to somebody, hey, I do $150,000 or $200,000 in sales on eBay, people, their eyes pop up. They're like, I can't believe it. But if I just do $100,000 on eBay, I'm really only netting $50,000 with all my work. So it's not as exciting, glamorous as it sounds. If you want to make $200,000 or $250,000 selling on eBay, you have to sell $500,000 worth of stuff.
Right.
In order to get that.
Yeah. So obviously the higher ticket items, they're just, they're all these things. That, oh my gosh, my brain is on fire right now with all the things that we need to talk about in terms of sort of the running the calculus on that.
Of course. The last business I worked in, we were operating and opening stores that were doing million plus dollar, $1.2, $1.4 million. And then at the end of the day, you look at it and you're like, well, you're the net profit here is $240,000. After it's all said and done, you did 1.4, you're coming back with 240, 250, and you've got your investors that you got to pay out to and stuff. And at the end of the day, you may not be coming home with more than 60 or 70 grand for all your work. And you're working nights and weekends, and it's the food and beverage industry, and it's cutthroat, and it's stressful and intense. And so I'd much rather sit down here, go out, find things, learn stuff all the time, and be available with my time to my family. But you're not making money hand over fist. It takes a lot of work. But don't get into it if you are not sure and prepared for the costs that you're going to incur. Because if you get in and you start buying, I know I can make $5 on this, $10 on that, and you're not really doing that time calculation, you're going to end up with a bunch of stuff that sits there for a long time. You're not making the money. And then you're like, oops, I forgot that eBay takes the 13.5%. Or you get to the end of the year and what? I owe 24% in taxes, or I owe 18% in taxes. You need to know that before you get started.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great way to end the show. That I'm literally, my brain is on fire right now. I'm thinking about all the little things about what a business actually makes versus, because I own a small business. And so like I think about these things all the time, and I'm sure a lot of people out there listening, I mean, what is it? 80% of American businesses are small businesses. So these are things that are applicable beyond just reselling. Right. So we'll kick those doors a little bit later on, but
nice.
We're going to end it right now. Any last words you have, Matt, for us about save your tax dollars?
No, I just don't let this scare you off. Just be informed and do your research. I learned a lot while I was starting because I had a tough situation that I started out of, and I didn't have any of this planned. If I were to do it over again, I would do exactly what I'm telling you to do, which is get all these ducks in a row before you get started.
Absolutely. Well, great word. All right. Well, we'll be back with a new show very soon. Thanks for listening. Remember to follow, like, and subscribe, all those things. Otherwise, have a great week, everybody.
Take care.